Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The nation's eyes remain on Broward County, Florida, in the wake of Wednesday's massacre at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School.
My friend Amanda was in the classroom with the shooter. I was told that there was three students that were shot in front of her.
Also tonight, those fatal shots, meanwhile, are resonating among Florida lawmakers at both the state and national levels.
How do we make sure when a parent is ready to send their child to school that in Florida that parent knows that child is going to be safe? Number two, how do we make sure that individuals with mental illness do not touch a gun?
We'll also get the latest on possible legislative remedies for the state's opioid crisis and try to get an answer to that most pressing of all questions. Will there be any kind of comprehensive gambling legislation to come out of the session? It's day four of week six in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. Once again, Florida has been the site for a tragic mass shooting. Wednesday's massacre at Broward County's Marjory Stoneman Douglas High resulted in 17 deaths. This is the 18th mass shooting in the United States so far this year, and it took place in what the National Council for Home Safety and Security called the safest city in Florida last year. From member station WGCU, Rachel Iacoboni spoke with an alumna of the school just after the news broke.
If anyone knows the halls of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, it's Breanne Merchant.
It is kind of spread out. There's like a main building and it's shaped like a square almost, and the middle is completely empty. It's a courtyard. So like when you walk to class, you're walking in one big square.
Merchant walked that square of the Parkland High School until her graduation 2 years ago. Since then, she's moved less than 2 hours across the peninsula to study journalism at Florida Gulf Coast University. But the news of Wednesday's mass shooting on the campus of her alma mater wasn't broken to her by other journalists.
My grandma actually texted me when I was in class. My first initial reaction was just, I didn't believe it, I don't think. So I went on Facebook and there was already the live stream posted.
And then, Merchant says, the text flooded in.
My friend Amanda was in the classroom with the shooter and I was told that there was three students that were shot in front of her.
Amanda herself is fine, Merchant says, physically at least.
Douglas is such an amazing high school. I wasn't originally assigned for that school. I was assigned for Piper High School, which is not known to be the best high school. So I switched because Marjory Stoneman Douglas was an A school, was known for its safety. You don't hear about that happening in your town, and that's what surprised me the most.
As Merchant talked about the shooting, less than 3 hours after it occurred, her little brother was still in lockdown at nearby Coral Springs Middle School. He was frantically texting their mom, who would then relay the messages to her. She says she didn't initiate contact with him or students besides Amanda, who she knew at the high school, because of the fear of making an active shooter situation even worse than it already was for her loved ones and all the others huddled in classrooms with them. I'm Rachel Iacoboni in Fort Myers.
In the wake of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas School mass shooting that left 17 people dead, politicians on the state and national level are weighing in on what can be done legislatively. We get more on that story from Sasha Cordner.
As the information continues to come in on the mass shooting, one area of agreement for people on both sides is he apparently had mental health issues. And it's one of the reasons Republican politicians want to focus talks on the mental health aspect. In the coming week, Governor Rick Scott is expected to hold talks with state and local leaders to discuss ways he says will keep Florida students safe.
How do we do that? It's going to be funding, both for security, for mental illness, for counselors, things like that. But on top of that, we've got to say to ourselves, if we have somebody that's mentally ill, they can't have access to a gun.
The House and Senate legislative leaders have already pledged to put more funding into mental health. Senate President-designate Bill Galvano says he's gotten the support of his colleagues to put $100 million in the budget for mental health screening, counseling, and training. And Senate President Joe Negron says they're also working to beef up school security and make them safer.
The total funding, I think, was about $75 million. And the Senate actually, in our budget, had a $13 million increase over last year's funding. The governor had a similar increase, and I think that's something that you'll see the entire legislature come together on in a renewed way as we move forward in the final parts of our budget.
Let's have a conversation about this right now, not just about mental illness, and that's part of it, not just about protection in our schools, and that's part of it. Let's get to the root cause.
That's Florida's U.S. Senator Bill Nelson speaking on the Senate floor Thursday. He says everyone should really be talking about gun control and beefing up background checks. He says at least on the national level, congressional leaders need to act before any more horrific events happen.
Sandy Hook Elementary, 20 students killed. The Pulse nightclub in Orlando, 49 people killed. Las Vegas, 58 people killed. That wasn't enough. Fort Lauderdale Airport, 5 people killed. That wasn't enough. Now, this high school, 17 killed, some as young as 14 years old. So when is enough going to be enough?
But many Republican politicians disagree. That includes Florida's House Speaker-designate Jose Oliva.
You know, you don't take cars off the road because someone got drunk, used one, and killed someone. You don't take a car off the road because someone rented a U-Haul and ran it into some people in New York City.
He says the focus should be more on the mental health aspect.
It's a mental illness problem, and I think we have to continue as a society to put a much greater focus on the prevention, not by eliminating guns, because you can't eliminate renting U-Haul trucks. What you have to figure out is, what is the underlying problem? Obviously, it's a condition of mental illness.
But overall, Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel said he'd like lawmakers everywhere to do one thing.
Go back to places like Tallahassee, places like Washington, D.C., and give police the power, if they see something on social media, if they see graphic pictures of rifles and blood and gore and guns and bombs, horrific language, if they see a person talking about, I want to grow up to be a serial killer, we need to have the power to take that person and bring them before mental health professionals at that particular time, involuntarily, and have them examined.
Meanwhile, with just weeks left of session, gun control advocates are not happy a number of their priority bills have not come up for a vote. It includes legislation they say would help keep guns away from felons, domestic abusers, and people with dangerous mental illnesses, as well as one that beefs up background checks at gun shows. One pro-gun measure was scheduled to come up for a vote in the Senate Thursday, giving concealed weapon licenses to people whose background checks were incomplete. But in the wake of Wednesday's mass shooting, Florida Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam says he's working with the bill's House and Senate sponsors to postpone this measure, originally one of his priorities, from further consideration this session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a measure to restrict certain abortion procedures is moving ahead in the Florida House.
We must have the humanity to think about what is happening to that child.
Salvation for low-income borrowers or a permanent date with debt. Florida's payday lending industry makes its case for more flexible terms before lawmakers.
But where we struggle is with access, and where we struggle is within our management. And these small money lenders give us this opportunity.
And time is growing short as lawmakers keep pushing for some kind of comprehensive gambling legislation this session.
What the president and I have said is that everything is on the table right now, in the hopes that if we conference on the issue, we have all the options available to us.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
After being delayed twice, a proposal restricting physician prescribing powers for opioids is once again moving in the Senate. It's part of a wide-ranging proposal to address overdose deaths, which have jumped in Florida and across the nation in recent years. Lynn Hatter has more.
Opioid abuse is a national emergency, as well as a growing crisis in Florida. And at the root is decades of lax prescribing that led to a proliferation of drugs like oxycodone becoming readily available. In 2011, Florida cracked down on so-called pill mills, resulting in an immediate drop in overdose-related deaths. But that number is climbing again, spiking, as people who once used prescription drugs and got addicted to them have turned to alternatives like heroin and fentanyl. Republican Senator Lisbeth Quisto's proposal is seeking to further limit the availability of prescription opioids by partly restricting physician prescribing powers.
Senate Bill 8 proposes a three-day supply limit when prescribing a Schedule II opioid for this treatment of acute pain associated with surgery, trauma, or acute illness. The bill proposes a seven-day supply may be prescribed if the prescriber, in his or her professional judgment, believes it is medically necessary.
A doctor would have to document the condition and explain if there's a lack of alternatives. The Florida Medical Association's Scott Powers agrees with limiting prescriptions in order to limit availability, but he says the 3 to 7 day supply limit may be too short a window, especially for certain types of patients.
There are many situations in which more than a 7 day supply is medically indicated, and valid reasons why exceptions for cancer treatment, hospice care, surgery, and trauma cases should be adopted. We ask that you follow the lead of the majority of states that have crafted a solution that gives physicians the ability to treat all patients properly.
It's something Beniquisto acknowledges as a problem. She says she is working with the governor's office and House to come up with a compromise. Senate Bill 8 does not just limit prescriptions. It also mandates more reporting to the state's prescription drug monitoring database. It allows data from that database to be shared with other states and requires providers to take a mandatory training class and receive a yearly certification for it.
I work for the Cannabis Action Network, and I typically stay in my lane. But as cannabis becomes a regulated industry and an accepted medicine, you're going to see more of us.
Jody James works for the Florida Cannabis Action Network.
We have found in states that have robust cannabis programs that we can reduce opiate deaths by 25%. So if you start by one less out of four every day by simply expanding our medical marijuana program, I think that's an intended consequence you can all live with.
Still more are pushing for increased funding for foster care to address a system advocates say is bursting at the seams when caretakers overdose and leave children behind. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
The Florida legislature is looking to impose new restrictions on abortion. As Sean Mulcahy reports, a measure that would ban a common procedure passed a divided House committee today.
The bill would ban doctors from using forceps and other instruments to perform an abortion. The legislation uses the non-medical term dismemberment abortion to describe the procedure. Vero Beach Republican Representative Aaron Grawl says these restrictions make for a more humane operation.
HB 1429 expresses respect for the dignity of life by prohibiting a physician from performing this brutal and torturous dismemberment procedure on a living fetus.
She argues the bill is constitutional because it doesn't infringe on a person's right to privacy or restrict access to an abortion. It simply regulates a medical procedure. The measure does allow for these so-called dismemberment abortions if the mother is in danger and it's the only remaining option, or if the mother receives an injection that kills the fetus prior to the procedure. Riverview Republican Representative Ross Spano says the measure simply protects a human life.
All this says is that one of the means it's being used in the vast majority of the cases, which results in an extreme and inhumane amount of pain to a living human being, should not be performed.
A number of Republicans have expressed support for the bill, objecting to abortions based on moral standings. But Democrats and many reproductive rights advocates argue this proposal not only restricts a woman's access to abortions, but it's likely unconstitutional. Judy Shecklin shared her experience with a second trimester abortion before the House Health Quality Subcommittee in January. When she was pregnant, her baby tested positive for Tay-Sachs, a genetic disease that usually develops within the first 6 months of life. Infants with the disease develop vision and hearing loss, intellectual disabilities, paralysis, and ultimately die.
At that time, I met with my doctor, and she told me that I would have the option, you know, of an abortion. She explained this procedure, and it sounded like, you know, though sad, tragic, horrible, it was something that was safe. And so, you know, I feel so compelled to say that this option must be available for other people who find themselves in this very tragic situation.
Thank you, Judy. Ironically, my mother was told the same thing in the early 80s when she was pregnant with me.
That was Tampa Republican Representative James Grant, and that exchange was one of many critics of the proposal highlighted as they boycotted Thursday's meeting. Orlando Democrat Representative Amy Mercado was among those who participated. She said the bill is an attempt to erode abortion rights.
I opposed this legislation then. I continue to oppose this legislation now. Because, as I mentioned, it is an unconstitutional ban on this one and only procedure we have left for women that need abortions in late terms.
She argues the additional requirements increase the chances of complications like infection. Mercado also says Grawl and others are relying on sensational language and unproven science like fetal pain to justify their actions, and she's confident the Florida Supreme Court will rule the bill unconstitutional if voted into law. She points to legislation from last session requiring a 24-hour waiting period before abortions, which the Supreme Court recently deemed unconstitutional as evidence. Planned Parenthood's Missy Wesolowski also spoke at the boycott Thursday morning. She faults lawmakers for barreling ahead without considering the implications.
The decision to terminate a pregnancy is a difficult one and personal for every woman. The conversations in committee have ignored the personal stories of women and discredited the experience and expertise of physicians.
Similar legislation has been passed in several other states, but faces legal challenges or has been stricken down. The bill is headed to the floor for a full House vote. It's not clear if the bill will pass this session, as the Senate version of this bill has not yet been heard. For Florida Public Radio in Tallahassee, I'm Sean Mulcahy.
Payday loan providers are asking for more loan options and extended repayments. Devondra Alston reports they argue it will give their customers more flexibility, but opponents insist it's still a debt trap for low-income borrowers.
Those in opposition of House Bill 857 believe an increase in payday loan amounts and repayment installments wouldn't be beneficial for low-income citizens. Reverend Rachel Gunter Shepherd calls the proposal exploitation.
We cannot exploit the poor simply because they are poor. It must stop. And people do take loan after loan, as was mentioned earlier. What is happening is that because it's taken out of their bank account initially, then they immediately have to take out another loan and another loan in succession, one after another.
Or in some cases, borrowers have taken multiple loans at the same time. But sponsor Representative James Grant says consumers would not be able to take out an additional loan until their repayments are completed.
In the state of Florida, we have a database. That database ensures that only one payday loan at a time can be opened, as well as numerous interest delayments, so to speak, where the interest would be stalled if somebody got to a place where they could not pay.
And payday lender Advance America's Carol Stewart argues people cannot layer their loans through these services because a database that keeps the records for existing loan payments they have not received.
The current law and this proposed legislation have three important things that other states don't offer when you hear that criticism. One is that you have an industry-wide cap of one loan at a time throughout the state and a database to back that up.
Supporters say payday loans are beneficial for their communities. Pastor Cleathan Sutton says he was initially opposed to AmScot loan provider until he realized how many of his church members use it.
My members, they use it if they come up short, might get $100, a couple hundred dollars to do to pay whatever bill to keep from going into default to ruin their credit. So I've seen it work. I've read through the literature about the payday loans and whatnot, and AmScot is the model.
Numerous studies on payday loans show higher rates of default than traditional ones. The Texas Office of the Consumer Credit Commissioner in 2014 found the default rate on payday installment loans was at 53%. Another study by the Center for Responsible Lending in 2015 found the defaults of 44%. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Devondra Alston.
Lots of other bill action taking place around the Capitol today. Let's get an update from Bob Brooks with our sister operation, the Florida Channel.
Today was Technology Day at the Capitol, and it was University of Florida Day. In the Senate Agriculture Committee, Senate Bill 776 passed by a vote of 5-0. This bill increases the fine for the theft of any commercially farmed animal or the theft of a bee colony from a registered beekeeper. After having passed agriculture, the bill heads to the Senate Rules Committee before going to the floor. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 1622, entitled Lands for Government Purposes. Among other things, this bill revises land acquisition procedures the Internal Improvement Trust Fund must use when acquiring lands. It authorizes land authority funds to be used to pay costs related to the development and construction of affordable housing projects. The bill is also designed to help protect military installations against encroachment. It passed the Senate Military and Veterans Affairs Space and Domestic Security Committee and now heads for Senate Appropriations. Senate Bill 674, sponsored by Senators Dana Young and Daryl Roussan, this bill, entitled Steroid Use in Racing Greyhounds, provides that a positive test result for anabolic steroids in certain samples taken from a greyhound violates the prohibition on the racing of animals that are impermissibly medicated or determined to have a prohibited substance present. The bill passed the Senate Rules Committee by a vote of 8-2 and now heads to the floor. An identical House bill now heads for Commerce. And finally, House Bill 1091, Early Learning. This bill requires school readiness providers to measure the quality of teacher-child interactions using a research-based observation tool. It also gives the Office of Early Learning the ability to terminate the contract of a provider that persistently fails to meet minimum quality measures. After being voted favorably by the House Education Committee, it will go next to the House floor. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Florida lawmakers are continuing a push to get gambling legislation passed this legislative session, but Regan McCarthy reports time may be running out.
House Speaker-designate Jose Oliva says even as the House and Senate move forward with gambling legislation in their chambers, the overall negotiations are still, in his words, at the very early stages.
We've had some conversations with the tribe. We've let them know that it's our hope that we could get something done this year. I think the same issues that have plagued a solution in gaming in the past are a risk this year again. We're making a legitimate effort, though.
Oliva says for the Seminole Tribe of Florida, that means ensuring a fair level of exclusivity. Through an agreement called a compact, the tribe gives the state part of its gambling revenue in order to secure what some have called a monopoly. But tribe representatives have raised concerns about proposals moving through the legislature that would legalize fantasy sports and give so-called referendum counties the right to operate slot machines. That last part is a priority of Senate President Joe Negron.
I think that we owe it to the hundreds of thousands of fellow citizens who live in the eight counties that approve referendums, including St. Lucie County, which I represent. It's the largest county in my district. And they had a referendum, and they decided they wanted to have additional slots as part of the gaming landscape in their community. And I think that needs to be given great weight.
The Senate bill looks to take some of the bite out of those changes for the tribe by giving the Seminole the chance to offer new types of games at tribal casinos, such as craps and roulette. That's not part of the House bill, but Oliva says he's not closed to the idea.
What the president and I have said is that everything is on the table right now, in the hopes that if we conference on the issue, we have all the options available to us.
But House Speaker Richard Corcoran has warned anything that could be construed as an expansion of gambling is likely to have a difficult time passing in the House.
The ultimate, absolute definitional thing, it has to be a contraction. If it's a contraction, as I said in the past, that a third grader can say, well, that's a massive contraction of gaming. We have lessened the footprint of gaming in the state of Florida. We've protected Florida as a family-friendly brand. Then let's look and see if someone can make that case. Then I'll look at it. But if they can't make the case, then it's a non-starter.
But Corcoran says he would really like to see the gambling issue be put to bed this year.
Every single year, it feels like there's a battle of some sort of expansion of gaming. And as a conservative, something I don't necessarily support at all. I would love to be able to have it be a legacy that for the people that come after me, they don't have to sit here and fight and defend Florida and the great brand that we are.
And Corcoran's not the only one hopeful gambling legislation will pass this year. Lawmakers are saying this session may be their last to legislate gambling, since a constitutional amendment will appear on the ballot this November that would give the public a say in all future casino gambling decisions. Meanwhile, advocates of that amendment have just released an ad urging lawmakers to take a step back and leave things as they are until the November vote. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Devondra Alston, Sean Mulcahy, and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters, and to Everglades restoration and fish and wildlife conservation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.